We are holding on Ahmed Hay. Ahmed Bey is 9 lines from the bottom, the 4th line of the white line. We mentioned yesterday in the course of the discussion of our mission, and we mentioned a din of Rav Barnas and Tana Chitim Behodele Besodim, that if Reuven says to Shimon, you owe me wheat, and Shimon says, no, but I owe you barley, we say he's potter. We say he's potter. And we mentioned 3 different possibilities. Why he's potter? Is it because implicitly Reuven, by not mentioning the barley, has been moichalot to him, which is Rashi's shitta? Is it that he was moida, that even if he was a moida, he never owed it to him in the first place, which is the Rosh's shitta? Or is it that Shimon has there's a difference how you look at it, whether you say that whether the Teveya is, by not mentioning it, has he been moichalit, as he's saying implicitly that at one time you owed me barley, but now I'm moichal you by that on that, not the fact that I didn't mention it. Or is it a matter of that he's admitting that it amounts to admitting that you never owed it to me in the first place? Or is it maybe something else, that Shimon has the ability to say later, you said I owe you wheat, which I don't. So therefore, fine, you know, as a joke, I said, yeah, sure, I owe you barley. But not that I seriously meant to obligate myself in barley. And we discussed the relevance of that to the Mishnah. So now we're going to get back into that. Gufa. Getting back to what we said before, Amar Rav Barnasan, Tane Chitim Behodele Besodim Potter, that if Reuven claims wheat and Shimon admits to barley, then he's Potter. The question is, Ma'ika Mashmalon, what exactly is Rav Barnasan telling us any kind of Chiddush? Tanena, we learn this in a Mishnah in Shavuot. Tane Chitim Behodele Besodim Potter. So Rav Barnasan is saying exactly the same thing. The answer is no. Ime Hoftim, if we only had the Mishnah, have Amina Potter mit Me Chitim Behodele Besodim. You would think maybe Potter means, fine, he's Potter from paying wheat because he didn't admit to it. Maybe, though, he's chayav to pay the value of the barley because he did admit to that. It should be like a moedim mitzvah. Kamash Malan. Kamash Malan. That is what Rav Barnasan wants to inform us, that when the Mishnah says Potter, doesn't just mean Potter from the mechit, it means Potter from anything at all. Yeah. Kamash Malan, the Potter Lagamri. Because he's a kofer hakol. Minatora, and originally Midrabanon, when you deny all of a claim, you're potter, even from swearing, because we're, as the Gemara mentions in a few places, chazaka ain't on a meis pono, it's chazaka that a person is not going to be so brazen as in front of his balsoib, in front of his creditor, as to say, I don't owe you anything, if in fact he does owe him. Moedim mitzvah is different. The Gemara explains in Bava Metzia that a person may be moedim mitzvah basically to stall for time. I don't have enough to pay the whole thing right now, so I'll claim that I only owe part of it, and that way I'll buy myself more time. So we make him swear, that way at least we establish, it's been established and based in now that he does owe the whole thing, and fine, he and his creditor can make up terms about how soon he's going to pay. Later on...
What did you say to the Tevea?
The Tevea said, you owe me X amount of wheat. Mm-hmm. And the Nisba answered, I owe you X amount of barley. But he completely denied the wheat. That's what we're saying. Therefore, he's a kofer hakol on the wheat. He's mentioning the barley, fine, but you didn't claim barley. And again, for the various reasons that we mentioned, he can't put him on the hook and say, okay, you owe me the value of the barley because you yourself admitted it.
He didn't claim
it. Again, for the various reasons. Either he was moichol or he admitted he never owed it, or because when he takes into base in, the guy can claim a shatter he said before, I never seriously meant to admit to barley either. I just did it as a joke. No, by mentioning barley. Yeah. Anyway, so in the middle of the times of the Amoraim, some say that was Rav Nachman made the stakana, they came up with the concept of Shavua Tesis, which we learned about in Ksubas and then here and there in different places, that it's a Shavua Midrabanan, that even a Kofer Hakol was made to swear in that case. But that's not a Shavua Minatora. That's only a Shavua Midrabanan. You were dealing with on a Daraita. So now let's consider what our Mishnah says. Hoyu anizok and shnayim. What we said that if the person had two animals that were injured, one big worth more money, one small worth less money, and you had two oxen that did the damages, and you're just not sure which one did which one. So we said, the Mishnah said, the Nizik is claiming the big one damaged the big one, the small one damaged the small one, and the Mazik is claiming the other way around. So we said, HaMoitzi Mechaveh Olav Araya, which again implies in a similar way to what we said yesterday, HaMoitzi Mechaveh Olav Araya implies that he should be It implies he should be able to collect something. It implies if he's not able to bring a raya, on the face of it, it means that he'll be able to collect a positive thing. Fine. So, for example, for the damages to the big ox, he'll be able to collect out of a small ox. So, fine, he'll collect a lot less than Chatzi Nezek because the small ox is worth a lot less than Chatzi Nezek, but he'll collect something. Similarly, the other way around, out of a larger ox, he'll collect a complete Chatzi Nezek for his small ox that was damaged. So, he'll collect something at least. According to Rabbi Bar Nachman, he ought to be potter completely because it's Tana Chitim Ahad Le Vesurim. He's saying your large ox caused the damage. He's counterclaiming and saying, no, it was my small ox. That should be Tana Chitim Ahad Le Vesurim. It's two different animals.
According to the case that we just
had. That's the question. Am I Chitim Vesurim? Isn't it a case of wheat versus barley? Why should he be pot? Why should he be? Why is the Mishnah implying that the Mazik is going to be high of something? The answer is Roy Mitzel Ve'enloy. True, but what the Mishnah doesn't mean that the Nizik is actually going to collect in this case. It means he should have been able to collect by right. However, if he can bring a raya, he'll be able to collect. But if not, he won't be able to collect anything. Not that, in other words, not that with a raya he'll be able to collect everything that he's claiming, and without a raya he'll be able to collect some of it. Without a raya, he won't be able to claim anything.
We wouldn't
have understood that. We would have thought the Mishnah is implying that he collects something. We're saying that no, without a raya, he can't collect anything.
The Mishnah implies he collects something without a raya.
That's what it seems, that he's at least collecting what the Mazik is admitting to. Well, that's what we're saying. Okay. Because the Mazik himself, on the face of it, was admitting that, okay, my small ox damaged your large ox, and therefore I should be on the hook for that. But no, we're saying since Tana Chitim Ahad Le Vesurim, then we don't say that. Now that's the thing. Rashi explains like this, and Tosfos explains somewhat similarly, that yesterday we were discussing the question, when we say, according to Sumchus, Maman Amotel B'Sofet Chokin, we discussed yesterday, does that apply even in a case of Bori or Bori, or maybe it only applies in a case of Bori V'Shema, as we discussed yesterday. Rabbi Bar Nosson, Rashi says, holds that Sumchus would not say Moman Amutz B'Safek Chokin when it comes to Bori or Bori. If the Nizik is making a Bori claim and the Mazik is counterclaiming with a Bori claim, he holds that, unlike what Rabbi Ba'aba said yesterday, he holds that Sumchus would not say in that case Moman Amutz B'Safek Chokin. He would also say Amutz Machaveh Ol Baraya, because after all, the Mazik is counterclaiming with a Bori claim. He's not counterclaiming, I'm not sure which one it was. He's counterclaiming, I'm sure that it was the small one.
It's only when, according to Sumchus, when one claim is weaker than the other, then...
That there's two different ways of understanding Sumchus. Yesterday we said that Ochia Ba'aba said that Sumchus holds his thing across the board. Well, to be exact, Sumchus holds even when Bori or Bori, and certainly when the Tevea is claiming Bori and the Nitva is counterclaiming Shema, then for sure, Maman Amotel B'Safek Chokin, yeah, then for sure, you don't say Amotel Machaveh Ol Baraya because the plaintiff is making a stronger claim. If it was Shema or Bori, if it was the other way around, then not.
But that's not the same.
But, right.
In other words, to summarize, it's only when it's equal claim, Bori to Bori, and then...
Or Bori to Shema, according to Rabbi Ba'aba. Whereas according to Rabbi Bar Nosson, Rashi explains that no, Sumchus would not say in the case of Bori or Bori of equal claim. Then he would agree you need an actual raya. Only if you're claiming Bori and the other guy is counterclaiming Shema, then he would say Maman Amotel B'Safek Chokin. So that is why according to Rabbi Bar Nosson, that's how we have to understand the Mishnah. And therefore, it fits with the Tana Chitim Ahad Le Vesurim. So that's why he's saying Roy Little Ve'Enloy. That without a raya, he's not going to be able to collect anything. Not even what the Mazik is admitting to, because it's Tana Chitim Ahad Le Vesurim.
So he's more machmir in a way.
In that sense, yeah. Question is, V'hatanya harez mishdalam alakotim in a godov alagodom in a kotim. Fine, because the Braisa say that. I should mention, Tosfos has a different understanding of Roy Little Ve'enloi. Rashi, again, is saying that Roy Little Ve'enloi means that if he can bring a raya, he'll be able to collect. Without a raya, he won't be able to collect anything. And by the way, there are all points out. According to that, it comes out he's worse for having made his claim. If he hadn't claimed anything, and the Mazik had said, my small ox damaged your large ox, fine, he'd be able to title to collect out of a small ox. Like this, by him counterclaiming, by him starting with a claim, your large ox damaged my large ox, that becomes Tana Chitim Ahad Le Vesurim. Anyway, Tosfos has a different understanding of Roy Lutova Emloi. If the Nizik was not Tosfos, if he did not grab a hold of the Chosim of the Mazik, which now he's a Muxik in, then he can't collect anything. But if he's Tosfos, Roy Lutova Emloi, as long as he doesn't have anything in his possession, he's not going to be able to collect without a proof. But if he's Tosfos, he'll be able to collect on that basis. The fact that he's Tosfos and the fact that now he has a Chazaka on that. So we discussed earlier in the Masechta the question Tosfos had brought, the possibility that maybe when we talk about Tosfos, maybe it means being Tosfos, the actual entity that caused the Hezek. In this case, for example, being Tosfos, sure, the actual Shur, as opposed to just being Tosfos some random Nechosim of his, maybe not.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Come and take a Shur?
If he's Tosfos it, because he argues that I have a claim to it, so if he does, once he has it in his possession, then Hamoitz Machabel Avar Ayah works the other way around. You want to take your shore back from me, prove that it wasn't this one that caused the damage.
Oh, God,
he got it. It's sort of, it's vaguely similar. Okay.
He takes the role and really.
In that sense, yeah. Well, we learned earlier in the Perek, right, about that there are cases where Obadiah Shimon actually is. Okay. Anyway. So the point is, okay, so again, getting back to, we explained the Mishnah means Roy Lutova Einloi, which again, according to Rashi, means practically speaking, without a Raya, he's not going to collect anything. And according to Tosfos, that only if he's Tosfos is he can collect something. What about the Braita that says he gets paid out of the small one to pay for the damage to the large one, and out of the large one to pay for the small one, meaning you do go according to what the Mazik admitted to. Not like Rabbi Bar Nosson. The answer is the top. Yes, the Braita would be talking again about a case where he was Tosfos. Then, since he was Tosfos, then fine, that sort of circumvents the rule of Tanech Chitim Behovel Abisodin, and therefore he can collect out of those. But if he wasn't Tosfos, then he's going to need to bring a Raya to collect anything. Now, let's continue. Let's look at another case of the Mishnah. Hoya Echad Tam Ve'Echad Mu'ud. We have another case in the Mishnah. If two oxen that caused the damage, one was Tam, one was Mu'ud. Hanizik Omer Mu'ud Hizik is a god of Tam Tekotin. The Nizik says that it was the Mu'ud one damaged the large ox. Therefore, I'll be able to get Nezik Shalim for my large ox. The Tam injured the small one. The Mazik argues it was the other way around. Again, I'm with Mechavel of Araya. Again, implying that Holoi Maisi Raya Shokel to Darkar Mazik. Again, that also seems to imply that without Araya, he'll at least be able to collect what the Mazik is saying. Because the question is only how much take more away from him than he's arguing he owes. But you should be able to collect what he does admit that he owes. Again, Vamai Chitin or Sarin. Again, wouldn't that be a case of Chitin versus Sarin? And again, the answer is Roy Little Vaimoy. Again, you could answer the same way that the Mishnah just means to imply that no, not to imply that without a Raya he'll be able to collect something, without a Raya he won't be able to collect anything. Or according to Tosfos, without being Tosfos, he won't be able to collect anything. Okay, again, Bahatanya Hare Mishtal and Makotam and Amur Belagotam and Atam. And again, the answer is the top up. So Rashi and Tosfos. Yes. So Rashi and Tosfos both point out the point that Rabbi Bar Nosson is making, the point of the way we have to understand the Mishnah according to him is in order for there to be a chiddush in the various cases, because he had a lot of cases in the Mishnah, on the face of it, what is each one adding to the previous one? And we just entered this last one the same as the previous one. So we have to say we have to say that we're dealing with different cases. There's Bori and Bori, there's Bori and Shema, etc. All the different possible scenarios in order to end up having that each one should be a chiddush. Otherwise, if you would just say that they were all Bori and Bori cases, and there's no real chiddush in one over the other.
What was the chiddush in the last one?
Okay, so Tosfos goes through actually and explains that it goes like this. The first case of the Mishnah where you had two people whose oxen were chasing after one person's ox and were not sure which one caused the damage. So even if you have the Mazik is claiming Shema and the Nizik is claiming Bori, so the Nizik is claiming I'm sure it was your ox that did the damage, and the Mazik is saying I'm not sure if it was mine or the other guy's, we would say that even then the Rabbanon say Hamoitz Mechaver L'Varai, even though on the face of it the Nizik is making a very strong claim and the Mazik is making only a very and then the Mazik is only saying maybe it was mine, maybe it was the other guy's, I'm not sure, we still say Hamoitz Mechaver L'Varai. That's the chiddush of the first part of the Mishnah. Then we continue the case of Katan and Gadol, the case where you have one large ox and one small ox, that would be talking about a case where it's the other way around, where the Nizik is arguing Shema. I'm not sure whether it was a large ox that damaged my large one or the small one that damaged my large one, but it was one did one and one did the other. The Mazik says I'm certain the other way around. I'm certain that it was the small one, the large one, the large one, the small one. Even in that case, Sumchus would hold Mamun Amutu B'Safek Chalkin, not like Rabbi Bar Nachman is saying implicitly. Nevertheless, you have a suffix over here because, after all, the nizik himself is saying, one of them doesn't know, right? And therefore, Chalkin. Right. Well, Tosafot said yesterday we have to be a suffix, not a suffix that only becomes a suffix because of their claims, but a suffix about the actual facts of the case itself. That we really don't know which one caused which damage. Next, the next case is with the Echad Tam v'Echad Muad, is a case the Gemara discusses in Bava Basra. If you have one particular camel that's known to be wild, and if later on you find among the camels one dead one, there's an opinion that you say that there's an opinion of Rav Acha who says you can assume that it was this one who killed it, and therefore be Machai of the owner of that camel appropriately. Never mind Sumchus. Our Mishnah, by mentioning Echad Tam v'Echad Muad, is implicitly saying not like that. Even though one of them is a Muad, and you would think it's cheap, it should be obvious that it was a Muad caused the damage to this one animal, still we don't say that. And the case where you had two animals that were damaged and two animals that caused the damage, and you're arguing which one did which, the chiddush is that if you were tofus, that if you were tofus, as we just said, then you will be able to collect. If you were tofus, even without proof, then you'll be able to collect. That's what we just said. And then the final case where it mentions Taman Amur damaged two animals of yours. Okay, there's no particular chiddush in that part, but since we mentioned Tam and Mord earlier in the Mishnah, then we mention it here for completeness' sake. So according to Tosfos, that's how we see a chiddush. So that there's no chiddush in the last part, but each of the other parts has a certain chiddush to it. So we're talking, again, the last part is there for parallelism. Since we mentioned Tam and Mord earlier, then we mentioned Tam and Mord at the end also. Fine, that can happen, but at least we have a chiddush in each of the other parts. And the point is, not all of them are the same types of claims. You have Bori and Bori, you have Bori and Shema, etc. The Mishnah said, "Hoyu shneim shel isha echad," that if both oxen that caused the damage belong to one person, shneim chayavim, then both of them are chayav. What do you mean, both of them? Amale ravim parzikul rabashi shmamina. Can you prove from that shvorim tamim shizikul, that if you have two oxen that are tam that cause damage, and you're not sure which one it was, and you're not sure which one it was? Or not, you're sure which one it was, let's say. Rotsim is egover, rotsim is egover. Doesn't mean that you could collect from either one you want, which Rashi explains. So you have two oxen, both of which are tam. Let's say now you know that one of them caused the damage. Fine, so on the face of it, you should be paid out of that one. Suppose now that one drops dead. Maybe you should argue that you can get paid out of the other one. That's what our Mishnah seems to be saying. Because even though we're not sure which of the two oxen caused the damage, but the fact is they're both tam and they both belong to the same person, and therefore we're saying you can substitute one for the other.
Because
they belong to one person. Tosfos learns the question is somewhat different. Let's say you have. It's not a case like Rashi says, where we know that one of them did the hezek and we know the other one didn't. No, we're talking about both of them definitely did the hezek, but both of them definitely damaged the one ox. Again, on the face of it, if you had both of them available, you would get collected a percentage out of each one. If one of them now drops dead, maybe you should be able to collect the entire thing out of one of them, out of the surviving one. On the face of it, again, you could seem to prove that in the Mishnah. The answer is no, because you could answer that the Mishnah is not talking about two oxen that are tam at all. It's talking about two oxen that are muad. And when it comes to muad, if the two oxen are muad, you don't get paid out of the value. You don't get paid out of the ox's value anyhow. You get paid min halia. You get paid out of the mazik, out of all the mazik's property. Doesn't matter how many muad. Any time a muad animal causes damage, you pay min halia. Doesn't matter whether it's one or two. The point is that if you have one of Reuven's two animals damaged both Muad damaged Shimon's animal. We know Reuven is high of the pay. You don't care which ox it was. As you know that it was one of Reuven's oxen, which is Muad, therefore he's on the hook to pay Nezek Shalom out of Min Haliyah. So therefore, it doesn't matter. So you can't prove from that in the case of Tamin. Okay, the question is, even Muadim, Ema Sefer. Fine, if you're going to say it's talking about Muadim, look at the next part of the Mishnah. Echad Gadol v'Echad Katan. We said if you had one large ox and one small ox, and Nizik and Gadol Hizik, by Mazik and Loki El Katan Hizik, the Nizik is arguing with larger ox that caused the damage, the Mazik is counterclaiming and saying that no, it was the smaller ox. We say, Amoit Mechabel Varaya. Even Muadim, if you're going to tell me that the case is both animals are Muad anyway, my Nakalamini, what's the difference? Which one caused the damage? So if you made Torah Malia borrow the Shalomi. Either way, you're going to have to pay the full value of the ox, regardless, because it doesn't depend on the value of the damaging ox anymore. It's Minhalia.
So
obviously, that part of the Mishnah must be talking about Tamim. Therefore, presumably, the previous part must also be talking about Tamim. If it's Tamim, should you be able to prove this case that Rav Mepozikia brought up? Omalei, so Rav Ashi answers him no, because you could still argue. No, you could argue the different parts of the Mishnah are talking about different scenarios. One's talking about where they're both Tam, one's talking about where they're both Muad. Amalei Rav Acha Sova Rav Ashi, fine, but Rav Acha Sova asks Rav Ashi, even Muadin, so fine, but if you're going to say, if you're going to say that both of them are Muadin, what do you mean Chayavim? What do you mean Shneim Chayavim? Lashon Chayavim sounds like it refers to the oxen. Chayav Gavra Mibarilah, it should say the person is Chayav. Patu, and furthermore, my Shneim, what do you mean both of them? Again, what do you mean both? There's only one owner. He's the one who's Chayav. It doesn't matter which oxen it was specifically. Ela la'olam b'tamim. So no, we have to answer after all that we are talking about that both animals are tamim. Can we prove then? Because, again, then otherwise the Lashon of the Mishnah doesn't fit. Shneim Chayavim implies that you're looking at the Chiyuv on the two oxen. That only applies in the case of Tamim, not in the case of Muadim.
In the case of Muadim?
In the case of Muadim, it wouldn't matter. There's no Shneim Chayavim. The one owner is Chayav to pay out of his property, out of his Nechasim, is Chayav to pay for the head. So, no. We will say, after all, that it is talking about two animals that are Tam. Okay, but what about the case over there? Does that mean you can substitute one for the other, etc.? No, Rabbi Akiva, because we could say that our Mishnah is telling us according to Rabbi Akiva. The Omar, which we learned yesterday, he said, and we're going to have it at the beginning of the next parak as well, Shukfin. He says, again, that when you have, that once the Hezek has been done, the Mazik and the Nizik become co-owners of the animal. The Nizik is entitled to a certain percentage of the animal.
And that's how we say Chayavim.
Well, so therefore, what happens is, that, again, according to Rabbi Akiva, you only get paid out of the value of the shur, and if the shur drops dead, that's it. Your shur's supposed to be gone. You, the Nizik, never end up getting paid. You were supposed to get paid because this ox was supposed to be sold and the money divided between you two.
What about the
Nevela? Okay, if the Nevela is worth something, you get something out of the Nevela, fine. But I mean, if the Nevela is worthless, then you lost what you're going to collect. So if both animals are still alive, you the Nizik will be able to collect one way or the other. But if one of them is dead, let's say, then if one of them is dead, then as the Gemara is going to say, let's read the Gemara. But time is the Isnu l'Tavayu. So the only reason that it works is to say that he can collect from both of them is the Isnu from one or the other. The Isnu l'Tavayu. No matter what, both animals exist. In that case, the owner is not able to push them off. If the owner argues it was this ox, not this one, fine, okay, either way, they both belong to you. So it's not my problem how exactly you raise the money. The point is, I'm a part owner of one of your oxen. But according to Rabbi Akiva, we would say that if one of them does not exist, if one of them has dropped dead, for example, Mutsi Amalei, then the owner is able to tell him, Zil Aisi Raya, the high Torah Azka, fine, go bring proof that this shur that's still alive is the one that caused you damage, Vashalam Lachan, then I'll pay you out of that. But without that, he's not going to be able to do that. So therefore, it works out very well that the Mishnah is saying, Shneim Chayavim, if Shneim Shalechah, but Shneim Chayavim, meaning that only if both of them are available is the guy that's going to be Chayav no matter what. But if one of them is not available, then you can't be Chayav him on that basis. Well, if it's Zaydim, that's different. We're talking about. Tosfos explains a little differently. So Rashi is saying that this only works according to Rabbi Akiva. According to Rabbi Shmuel, you would say, no, he's the Baal Chayav, he's going to get paid either way. Tosfos says, on the contrary, according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shmuel, though, would agree with this concept. Rabbi Shmuel would just say there's no chidus, not chidus. Rabbi Shmuel would agree with the concept that once the animal is dead, you can't collect. You have nothing to collect from. Even though he's saying you're a Baal Chayv, who has a lien on this particular animal, sort of. So if the animal's dead, then you don't collect from it. There's no chiddush in it, then, therefore.
You would not say that you got something else, land or whatever?
Well, in this case, though, no. If the fact is you're supposed to collect out of the value of the one animal. If you didn't, if the animal died before you had a chance to collect, tough luck. So the point is, by character, according to Tosfos, Rabbi Shmuel would definitely agree with this din, and according to him, there's no chiddush in it. The Mishnah has no need to even mention it. According to Rabbi Akiva, the Mishnah would have a need to mention it. Given that they're shutfim, you would think therefore, one of them is considered already in the chazaka of the nizik. You would consider as if he already has a certain chazaka on it, and therefore the nizik could argue that the one that dropped dead is the one that's 100% yours, not the one that's 50% mine. And the chiddush would be, we don't say that.
What do we say then?
So we would say nothing. We would still say both according to Tosfos, both according to Bishmol and according to Rabbi Akiva, nothing doing. You're out your money. Hadron alachamani. Continuing on the topic of oxen goring, again, which is going to be the entire subject of our parak, Mishnah says, if a shur gores four or five other oxen one after the other, and Rashi explains that we're talking about that even after all of that, he still remains a tam. Now, how does an animal remain a tam after goring four or five times? So Rashi explains, let's say that we're going to discuss later on in the parak, there has to be a certain pattern to the, goring. One each day, as we mentioned before, we had the opinion of a mayor that he can sow in one day, but it can be, for example, let's say he gores every other ox he sees, every third ox he sees or whatever. But Rashi says, let's say, for example, he gores ox number one, ignores number two, gores number three, ignores number four and five, and gores number six. There's no pattern here. So even though he's gored three times, you can't call him a moor. Other Rishonim bring other problems. Because there has to be some kind of pattern.
Where do we know this?
Because otherwise you can't call it mu'ad. Mu'ad means that you know that from now on this is a known dangerous animal. You know that under certain known circumstances. Every animal, every other animal, every Shabbos, every weekday, as we'll discuss later on. Yeah, but not if it's just a random. There are other Rishonim talk about other possibilities, including, for example, one possibility is maybe we're talking if it all happened in one day. The problem with that is that a mayor holds it all happened in one day, that is considered mu'ad, and the beginning of our mission is according to the mayor, so that doesn't really work. But you also have, for example, I think the Rashba brings up a possibility, what if it did a whole bunch of goring, let's say it did them in a pattern, normally would have made it a mu'ad, but nobody brought the case to Basin yet. No Adam came to bring it to Basin. It can't be a mu'ad until the case comes to Basin. Okay, whatever, the point is that you have, after all of this, the animal nevertheless is attacked. So again, the payment for all this goring is going to have to be done to Gufa. How do we work it out? So Yeshalom La'achon Shabbat. You start out by paying the person, the owner of the last animal that was gored. So then if after that there's any money left over, Yaksu L'Shalafana. Then you return it to the next Then you return it to the previous one. So in other words, you had that the ox went and gored oxen belonging to Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar. So you start out by paying Yisachar for his chatinet. If there's any money left after that, then you give it. Then you start from the last and work your way up for reasons which we'll discuss in the Gemara. If you have any money left after paying Yisachar, then you pay Yehuda. If there's any left after paying Yehuda, then you pay Levi, etc. The mayor says therefore the later one always benefits more. He always gets more of his chatinet. Divrei Rav Meir. Reb Shimon says, I agree with the basic principle, but I hold that we do it differently. Let's give it a scenario. Shor shavim afayim shenagas l'shor shavim afayim. The shor is worth 200. The other shor that gored is also worth 200. The ein anavela yafakum, the carcass is not worth anything, so the full loss of 200 zuz, chatinezik is going to be 100. Zen notel manav, zen notel manav. What happens, therefore, is that the usual rule, chatinezik, the mazik is going to get, you're going to sell the animal, the mazik is going to get 100, not the nevela, the nevela is not worth anything. Of the live animal, $100 of it belongs to the mazik, and 100 belongs to the nizik. Chazav and Nogach Shorach, Chazav and Masayim. Now what happens if the gore is another ox, which is also worth 200, and again the Nevela is worth nothing, so again you have a Nezek, again you have 100 that has to be paid out. Then you do as follows. Ha'achra and Nota Mana. The one who was gored last instead is going to get his whole money, his whole 100 zuz. The Shalafanav, the one from before that, Zenota Chamishim zuz, Zenota Chamishim zuz. Each one is going to get 50. So the last Nizik is going to get 100, the first Nizik is going to get 50, and the Mazik is going to remain with 50. Now what happens if it gores a third time, and you have, so now you have three Nizakim, then you keep on doing like that. The last one is going to get a mana out of this animal. The shalafan of chamishim zuz, the one before it is going to get 50 zuz. The shnayim erushenim dinner zav, and the first two, meaning the first nizik as well as the mazik, are each going to get a gold dinner, which is 25 zuz. You keep on splitting it in half like that as you go along. So in other words, again, according to the mayor, what you would say in a case like this is you start by paying 100 to the last nizik. You now have 100 left in the animal. Now there's another Nizik who lost 100. You give him the whole 100, and the first, so in Rav Shimon's case, let's say you have three Nizakim in them. According to the mayor, we would say the last two Nizakim get their 100 each, and the first Nizik doesn't get anything. According to Rav Shimon, rather, the last Nizik gets 100, the second Nizik gets 50, and the first Nizik gets 25.
According to
the mayor, the last Nizik and the next to last Nizik get 100, and the first Nizik doesn't get anything.
So it's 100 and 100.
So 100 and 100 and nothing according to the mayor, and 100, 50, and 25, and 25 left for the Mazik according to the Chinnin. So the Gemara says Machnisin Man. According to who is our Mishnah? The loy Rabbi Akiva. On the face of it, our mission doesn't seem to be either like Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Akiva. The opinions of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva that we discussed in the previous parak about whether the Nizik is a Shutter or a Bachor. Incidentally, Rabbi Nachmanano points out an interesting thing. Rabbi Meir, we know from the Gemara tells us in Erevin, Rabbi Meir was a Talmud by both Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara tells us he was first Talmud by Rabbi Akiva, but he couldn't understand what Rabbi Akiva was talking about, what Rabbi Akiva's learning was too deep for him. So he went and learned by Rabbi Shmuel, and later on he returned to Rabbi Akiva. So therefore, if the Reisha of our Mishnah, the Tanakama of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, the Gemara wants to find out which of his Rabbeim is he talking according to. If you say according to Rabbi Shmuel that the Nizakim are considered each a Baal Chayv, Hai Achra and Acham Niska, why is the last one getting the maximum amount of payment? Rishon Niska Mubarele should be the first one. The usual rule, as we said before, when you have a bunch of Chayv, if you say all of them are considered Baal Chayv, the earlier Baal Chayv should be the first one to collect, not the last Baal Chayv. Now, okay, we said before, we talked about the case before, we had a Baal Chayv versus a Nizik. We said if the Baal Chayv goes ahead and grabs it, even if he came after the Nizik, Masha also after. But that's different. They have two different types of claim. Here, all the Nizakim have the same type of claim. They all have the same lien on the animal. They all have the same opportunity on the animal. But it's all the same level of Chayv. So why would we say that the last one gets the maximum amount when it's the first one? No, the first one should be getting them because he owed him first, according to Rabbi Shmuel. And if you're going to go according to Rabbi Akiva, who says, again, that once there's a Nezek, the Mazik and the Nizik become partners in the animal, then, what do you mean? If there's any extra after paying the last one, then you go back to the next one. And so you end up that the earlier Nizakim might end up losing out completely. Lukulami Baile, it should be divided equally among all of them. All of them were partners in it. Again, this ox went and gored Ruvain's and Shimon's and Levi's ox. So now all of them become partners together with the original owner of each of them. Yeah, they should be equal partners, yeah. Amar Rava, La'ulam could be Shmuel Dama instead of 150 and 25, according to Shimon, or 100, 100 and 0, according to Meir, yeah. You could say very well that the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Shmuel that says that they're all considered Baalei Chayvus. Or de kashalach achar and achar nisko rishon nisko mibarele. So you're asking why do we work from the bottom up instead of from the top down? Why doesn't the first nizik get his whole chassi nizik and then the second one and then the third one, etc.?
That means the last one.
What? That's it, yes.
Why we get the last one?
That's what we're asking. The answer is Hoch Maiskin and Kenshi Toxin Nizik Ludwig Hey Manu. But the case is talking about suppose that the Nizik went and grabbed this animal, the last Nizik went and grabbed this animal intending to collect from it. So what happened is that each time, V'nasa Ola, Peshem HaSachar, the Nezakin, so therefore, he became a Shem HaSachar as far as any Nezik that happens with it afterwards. Meaning, in other words, like this. So the first goring took place. The Nizik grabbed a hold of the animal, which he wanted to do that to make sure. I mean, for example, you know, again, given that the payment can only be made out of this animal, if the animal's dead, as we said at the end of the previous paragraph, and you forfeited anything, so now, what's to prevent the owner from taking this animal and sending it off someplace, you know, to another city or something? That way they can't collect from it. So the Nizik may well want to be toifus it right away, grab a hold of it right away, so he has it to collect from. By doing that, he becomes a Shrei Masachar on it. A Shrei Masachar, Rashi explains, because he's gaining from it, because he's gaining precisely that, but now he has what to collect from. Rabbeinu Chananel says a little bit different. According to Rabbi Akiva, it is. According to Rabbi Shmuel, it's not. According to Rabbi Shmuel, though, he's going to be paid out of the value of the shirt. Fine, but he doesn't have any ownership in the shirt itself. He's using the shirt as an apotiki
in order to collect.
So that's what Rabbi Hananel explains, that what it amounts to is it amounts to a mashkin. It amounts to security. No, but therefore, when you're holding security for a loan, for that itself, you're considered a shrei masachar. Either way, the point is, he is considered a Shema Sachar. As a Shema Sachar, therefore, he now becomes responsible for anything that the Shur does. He effectively actually takes over the responsibility that the original owner had. So therefore, now if the ox causes damage to somebody else's ox, then that next person is going to be the Nizik who's going to be entitled to collect more. That is why we're saying that the later Nizakim are entitled to collect ahead of the earlier Nizakim. Because the earlier Nizakim themselves are responsible for damage. Because they were toifus, and then yet it went out and caused damage.
So the later Nizakim, since they took the animal.
No, the earlier Nizik took the again. Reuven, the first Nizik, took the animal.
Right.
He became a Shem HaSachar. Now that animal went and gored Shimon's ox.
Right.
So Reuven is responsible now. Therefore, you can't allow Reuven to pay his whole to collect his whole Chatzi Nezek from the original owner. Because he's responsible. You're going to have to allow Shimon to collect the Chatzi Nezek first. And if there's anything left, then we'll deal with Reuven. So he becomes effectively a Shema Sachar as far as any Nezik that it does in the future. Okay, then the question is, fine, but then what do you mean in that case saying that if there's anything left according to the mayor, you give it to the next Nezik? Again, you may end up that the owner ends up with nothing, because again, you have the scenario in the Mishnah, you may have the last Nezik gets 100, the previous Nezik gets another 100, The first Nizik, fine, gets nothing, but neither does the owner get anything. Why? Yachzor the Bailam the Bailai. It should be in that case. The fact of the matter is, the Bailam have effectively given over this shur to this other guy to watch. He becomes liable instead of them for the Nizakim. Why is the owner complete? Why is the owner completely losing, not reimbursed for yet? Yeah. So it should be, therefore, that the original owner still retains a part ownership of the animal.
True.
Yeah. So Ravina says, you're right, that's exactly what the Mishnah means. Im yesh ben moisim ben nizakov, yes, but what it means is, if there's an excess in the nizikin, meaning, Rashi says, let's say, for example, suppose that the earlier nezek was a greater amount than the later nezek. You know, Reb Shimon in the Mishnah is assuming that all of them were the same amount of nezek. Each time, the dead animal is 200 down to zero, and therefore the chatzi nezek is 100. Let's say not. Let's say, for example, the fourth goring, Rashi says, the animal was worth a mana, 100 zuz. The fifth goring, the last one, it was an animal that's only worth 50 zuz. And The first, second, and third we're not dealing with right now. Let's say, the Mishnah talked about a case where this animal gored five times,
okay,
and it's still a time. So let's forget about the first three for a minute. So now she says, let's say the fourth one's ox was worth 100 zuz. Chatzi Nezek is going to be 50. The fifth one is worth only 50. Chatzi Nezek is going to be 25. So therefore, what we do is, that's what we mean. Im yesh by moiser, if there's an excess, if the previous one's nezek was greater than the last one, yachzor l'shalafanim, then he's going to give it to the previous one. So meaning, in other words, in a case like this, what we're going to say is the fifth one is taka going to be only entitled to only 25 zuz, only one gold dinar, which is 25 zuz. Therefore, what it means is, he's only getting chatzi nezek. The other 25 is going to go to the previous nezek to help pay for his nezek, and so forth. So that's what it means. Not if there's anything left after paying the first nezek. It means if the second nezek is smaller than the first one, or the third is smaller than the second, etc., then it's going to start going up the chain. But if they were all equal, then yeah, according to that way of looking at it, if the people are all considered shomerim, then after all, something is going to have to end up back with the original owner. And Tosfos points out that you can have a case where you skip over one. You could have a case, let's say, Tosfos gives an example. Suppose the fourth and fifth nezakim were equal, and the third one was more than either one of them. So therefore, the fourth and the fifth are going to end up getting their nezik, and the third one may not. The other way around, actually. Sorry, the fourth one is not going to get anything because his nezik was no larger than the fifth one. So everything that has to go to the fifth one is going to go to him, his entire chatzi nezik. Now there's nothing left from that stage of things to give to the fourth one. However, the third one had a larger nezik, and therefore he's going to collect the excess of his nezik over the
fifth. The third one was bigger than the fourth and fifth,
which the fourth and fifth were both equal. According to the way we're saying it, the fifth one is going to collect his chatzi nezek. The fourth one is not going to collect anything because his nezek was exactly the same. And the third one is going to collect whatever his nezek was more than that. So again, if the fourth and fifth, let's say each one had a chatzi nezek where they're supposed to be collecting 25, and the third one's chatzi nezek is supposed to be 40, so the fifth one is going to collect the 25, the fourth one's not going to collect anything, and the third one will collect 15. And so we also know that he also Robin Amr Rabbi Yechanan. And when Robin came from Bava, from Eretz Yisrael to Bava, he reported that Rabbi Yechanan said, "Mishpshias Shemun Naguba." That's the reason why we effectively make the earlier Nizakin Chayev to pay the later one is because it's a matter of Pshia of the Shemur, which is effectively what we just said, that the earlier Nizakin are sort of like Shemurim on the animal. And therefore, they're responsible or partially responsible for the damage that was caused.
By the later one,
yeah. Okay. So the question is, Mayu Kimta Pi Rabbi Shmuel. So what are you telling me then? You've shelled dying so far that the Mishnah is only according to Rabbi Shmuel. Ihochi Ema Sefer. But if you're going to say that, look at the next part of the Mishnah. We said if a shur worth 200 gores, a shur worth 200, the nevela is worthless. Then each one gets 100. The mazik and the nizik. Then it's 100 and then 50 and 50 left over for the mazik. So now we're saying again, you prorate it. You go 100 for the last one, 50 for the previous one, 25 for the one, 21 for the 25 for the one before that, and 25 left over for the mazik. That part, I saw in the Rav Akiva, Dama Torah to Shutfiu. Now that part seems to be according to Rav Akiva, who says that there's Shutfim in the animal. Therefore, Rav Shimon is saying that therefore the Bilem end up with 25.
Meaning they
as opposed to Rav Meir, who said the Bilem end up with nothing.
And according to Rabbi Akiva, they're partners,
so the amount, the percentage that belongs to the mazik keeps on going down, but he always has some percentage in the animal. So I saw in the Rabbi Akiva, I'm a Torah to Shurfi. So now we're according to Rabbi Akiva, who says that the shur belongs to Shurfi. Reish Rabbi Shmuel, the Sefer Rabbi Akiva. Are you going to tell me the first part of the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Shmuel, and the second part is according to Rabbi Akiva? Now, we don't usually like to do that. Now, a couple of Meforshim ask, and in particular, the Pnei Yeshua ask, so what's the problem? We have two Tanoim over here. We have Rav Meir and Rav Shimon. Why would it be so hard to say that Rav Meir holds like Rabbi Shmuel and Rav Shimon holds like Rabbi Akiva? What's the problem with that? So there are Meforshes. So there are Rishonim who point out that if that were the case, if they're just recapitulating the Machlokas of Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva, they shouldn't be putting it in independent terms. They should be saying, they don't have to necessarily say, I hold like Rabbi Shmuel or I hold like Rabbi Akiva, but they should be using the same term. they're considered shufin, or they're considered balichot. The fact that they choose different scenarios of their own. He says Yaakov Afonav, Yaakov Shalofnei Afonav, 50, 25, etc., implies that they're having an independent machlok. So that's the question then. If they're having an independent machlok, it must be within either the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel or the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. How could you have that one part of the Mishnah implies that we hold like Rabbi Shmuel and the other part like Rabbi Akiva? The Pnei Yeshua has a long explanation that he explains differently. That Rashi and Tosfos over here discuss the issue. What about, for example, we mentioned at the end of the previous perek that if the nizik were to grab a hold of the animal, then it would be different according to Rabbi Akiva. Then you would say earlier in our sugya, we said if the nizik grabbed a hold of the animal, he becomes a shema sacher on it. So then he's partially responsible. Why don't we say that the mission? Why don't we say the Shimon's case is also talking about that? And then it becomes easy to understand why the later ones get paid more and the earlier ones get paid less, and the owner is still entitled to a part ownership of it because he's a shema sacher. So Rashi says because according to Rabbi Akiva there'd be no chiddush in that. Now that's how Rashi learns that it's true. It could work according to Rabbi Shmuel. It could work according to Rabbi Akiva if tapas. However, there wouldn't be any chiddush in it. Tosfos learns differently. Regardless, even if tapas in nizik, you're still going to have this machlokas in Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. Even if tapas in nizik, according to Rabbi Akiva that they become shutfim, he's not considered a shema sacher. He's considered a shema sacher on his portion, not on the entire animal. Therefore, you'd still have the issue of what about the chiyuv on the other half of the animal. But now, the Pnei Yeshua points out that when the Gemara is asking over here, are you saying that part of the Mishnah is according to Rabbi Shmuel and part according to Rabbi Akiva? That seems to work out better according to Rashi's understanding, according to Tosfos's understanding. Rather, if we say that one part of the Mishnah is talking about tapas and the other part is not talking about not tapas, then it works to ask why is one part according to Rabbi Shmuel and the other according to Rabbi Akiva. If you say like Tosfos that both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon are talking about a case with tapas, then why is the Gemara asking? Why is the Gemara B'chal asking one part is like Rabbi Shmuel, the other part is like Rabbi Akiva? It's the wrong question, really. Yeah. So Amri, so they answered, Ein. Yes, you could say that the Mishnah is partially according to Rabbi Shmuel and partially according to Rabbi Akiva. Yes, we find that Shmuel said to Rabbi Yehuda earlier in the Masechta, Shinina, sharp one, Shvoik Masnitzin, abandon trying to fend for the Mishnah according to one Tana, but Tobatroy and follow me, Reish Rabbi Shmuel, the safer Rabbi Akiva. So okay, there he hadn't said it about Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva. He said it earlier in the Masechta about Rabbi Tarfon and the Rabbanon, but still the same idea. Sometimes you have no choice, but yeah. It's Manami, they said also that Omer Rabbi Yechonon Hikdishin Nizik Ikabinayu, that we know that one practical difference between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Akiva is if the Nizik was Makdish the animal, and therefore that affects the question of whether the Nizik actually has partial ownership of the animal or not.
According to Rabbi Shmuel,
you can't be Makdish it, because the Bechlal not considered yours. You have a lien on it, but it's not considered yours in any sense. And therefore, going back to what we said before, if you grab the hold of it, you become a shema sacher on it.
Right.
And according to Rabbi Akiva, you do have a partial ownership of it. And again, according to Rashi, if you were Tosfos, it's true, you would also be a shema sacher. According to Tosfos, not. Now the Gemara starts off a new topic. We learn in Mishnah later on in our Masechta, if somebody is tekeya to his friend, noisim loisela, then he gives him a sela. What is tekeya? Rashi says two possibilities. One is he hits him by his ear, like he boxes his ears, and the other is tekeya, literally means blowing. I mean, he literally blows a loud sound into the guy's ear. Now, there's not necessarily any nezik.
First
interpretation is he boxes his ear. He punches him in the ear. Punches or hits him on the ear. Now, we're not talking about where he actually injured him and made him deaf. That's a different case that the Gemara will talk about later in the Masechta. Here we're talking about basically he just caused him embarrassment. Therefore, noisim loisela. So he pays him a sela. Which is that. So Rashi learns that amount covers only boshet. If there was, in fact, a sire or nezik or what have you, he'd have to pay them separately. The Rambam on the other hand. however much it is. But so those would have to be calculated, but the seller is assumed to be the amount for the Bershus.
Why is that?
That's what the Chachamim figured out is the amount for is the appropriate amount for the thing.
How much is the seller?
Seller is, so that's what we're going to discuss now. What the two kinds of sloy, as we discussed, as we learned in Kedushim, we're going to discuss in a second. But the Rambam learns differently. The Rambam learns the seller is meant to cover everything. It's meant to cover the. We're not talking about the guy actually made him death or anything. That would be a whole different matter. We're talking about okay, even there was a little bit of pain, there was a little bit of whatever. The seller is meant to cover all of that. So, Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, that's yeah. Rabbi Yehuda, I mean, Mishum Rabbi Yitzchak, really money. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Rabbi Yitzchak, really, it's not a seller, but rather a money. A seller is 4 zuzim. A money is 100. Is 100 zuzim. It's much more. Well, the question is, how who gave the tzokel achad? Right? It once happened that one person did this to somebody else, and now Rashi explains the case that we're going to have was in Babel. This seller or money that we're saying you're supposed to pay the knas. You don't do knas in Babel. But Rashi explains the case is again the guy was. Because they weren't smoking. But again, but Rashi explains the case is the guy was toifus, and as we learned in the first paragraph, if the guy is toifus, then you have to start figuring out how much is owed, and
what was
he was toifus, property that belonged to the that belonged to the master.
And therefore, then
and therefore now you have the question: how much is he entitled to keep? There are other before we explain other possibilities. It could be, for example, that the question was he wants to force him to go to Eretz Yisrael to be judged by based on smoking, whatever. So Rav Tuvia bar Masna sent him, or the case, sent the question to Rav Yosef. Fine, we know from the Mishnah that it's supposed to be a seller. What kind of seller? Seller of Suri tan or seller of Medina tan? Are we talking about a seller of Suri money or of Medina money? We learned in Kedushin that in those days there are two types of silver coins. One was Suri, which is pure silver or almost pure silver. The other one was Medina, where it was 1/8 silver and the rest copper.
Medina means
the country. It means Eretz Yisrael, yeah. So in Eretz Yisrael, they use a much more debased coinage. So it's worth 1/8 of a seller suri. So when we say a seller, according to the Chachamim, does it mean a seller suri, which would mean 4 zuzim, or does it mean a seller Medina, which would be 1/8 of that? It would be therefore half a zuzim.
Seller Medina, more like 8.
Whatever, that's the question. Amalei Tanisua. He says you can prove it from our Mishnah. Because what did our Mishnah say? That our Mishnah had given according to Rabbi Shimon that you start the last nizik at 100, the previous nizik at 50, the previous one gets a gold dinner, which is 25 zuz. Now, and the Mishnah stops there. Now, remember, the Mishnah had mentioned a case where the ox gored 4 or 5 times, so you would think, therefore, it should be giving us the whole scenario for the entire four, for at least for 4 times. Instead, it stops after the 3rd time. The Isakrat Tani Tana Sela Medina. Now if you're going to say that the Tana is referring to Sela Medina, then Then the Mishnah should give us one more thing. Yeah, but you can have a case where you have the last nizik at 100, the previous 150, the previous 125, and the previous 12.5. In other words, what it should be is like this. We can assume that fine. The mission doesn't want to bother talking about half dinner. But if we're going to say that we have to assume, he says, that the Tana is talking about Selah Tzuri. Oh no, we can't assume he's talking about Selah Tzuri. Because if he was going according to Selah Tzuri, then the Mishnah could have given us one more. It could have said, after 25, there's one more. If you have 4 nizakim, the last one gets 100, the previous one gets 50, the previous one gets 25, and the previous one gets 12.5.
Is another way of saying it, we get
12 zuzim of Kesef Tzuri plus a seller of Kesef Medina. Because of Kesef Medina, remember, it's worth 1/8. So a seller of Medina is the equivalent of a half a zuz, because there's 4 zuz in a seller. A seller Medina is equivalent to half a zuz of Kesef Tzuri. So the Mishnah should have mentioned that. Whereas if we say the Mishnah is talking about Kesef Medina, fine. The Mishnah didn't want to bother mentioning a half a zuz. So it stopped at the point where you get to 25, where we'd have to deal with fractions.
Right.
But if it's talking Kesef Tzuri, then it should have gone down one more, and it could have given another case without resorting to fractions. Therefore, we
should have said what?
It should have said 12 zuzim of Kesef, plus a sela of Kesef Medina. So there's the fact that it didn't implies that the Mishnah is talking about sela Medina.
Exactly.
So he answers him, not necessarily Tana ki roch l'leisim listening for l'ezel. What do you expect the Tana to be like a peddler who considers that he has to list all of his wares? Once the Mishnah mentioned three times, that's enough. We can get the idea from there that you keep on dividing, that you keep on dividing it down by half. The Mishnah didn't have to mention everything. We don't really have a proof one way or the other. On the one hand, it's true. The Mishnah, on the face of it, having started with a case where the ox gored four times, it should have mentioned four divisions. On the other hand, the fact is, once the Mishnah mentioned three divisions, that's enough. We're meant to be able to understand the rest of it on our own.
You mentioned three. What would be Tzuri and what would be...
That's the thing. If we said, once we're at three, we can still say that he gets 25 gulim. We don't know at that point whether it's Tzuri or Medina. But if it had gone one more, then we would know, because either it would say 12 and a half zuzim, or it would say 12 zuzim plus one sela medina. Like this, we don't know. So my havi Allah, so what's the bottom line? What's the story with it? Pashtua, they were able to answer in Rahadu Amr Rabbi Yehuda Amr Rab, based on what Rabbi Yehuda tells us in the name of Rab, call kesef tahavim v'torah kesef tzuri. Any case where the Torah tells us that you have to pay kesef, then it's kesef tzuri, it's full-fledged stuff. Michel Debrayim, any time when you're only obligated to pay something the Drabbanon, Kesef Medina. So now this case of Tekeel HaVere is only Medrayim. The Chachamim established the Sela as the amount for Tekeel HaVere. Therefore, it would be Kesef Medina.
So, in Torah, it's Kesef Tzuri,
and the Drabbanon? And Drabbanon, Kesef Medina. Okay. So the Gemara continues with the story. Omer Le'ahu Gavra. So this guy says to the Dayanim, you know what, says to Rabbi Yosef, okay, you know what, well, look, at that point, if all I'm standing to get out of this is a half a zuz, because it's a sela of Kesef, Medina, which is only worth a half a zuz in Kesef Suri, it's too little. I can't be bothered even to bother collecting it. Neis v'lanim, just give it to the Anim. However, Hodra Amale, then he changed his mind and said, Neis v'niali, actually give it to me. Ezo the every brain I've shown. Let me go and I'll get myself some refreshments with it. Amale Rabbi Yosef, said, you can't. Kvar zocho v'anim. The anim have already been zofed. Now, why is that? Let's see. The afa gab deleka anim hocha, even though there are no anim present right now. Now, Rabbi Yosef was a gabai for the anim. Anan, yad anim anan. We, Rabbi Yosef, serve as the hand, as the extension of the Aniyim. Now, Tosfos gets into a bit of discussion about this. First of all, I mean, once the guy said, I'm going to give it to Tzedakah, that alone obligates him to give it. Who cares whether Yad Aniyim or not? Tosfos answers because he didn't actually get the Chatzidus yet. If he had gotten it and said, I plan to give this to Tzedakah, then yes, that itself obligates him. He hadn't received it yet. If it weren't for the Yad Aniyim business, he would have been able to take it back.
If he had received it
and then said, I'm going to give it to Tzedakah, then he couldn't change his mind, even if there's no Gaboy Tzedakah.
But by not having received it, he
would have been able to change his mind, except that what we have over here, Tosfos explained, effectively what we have over here is Maimat Shloshtam. Oh, no, sorry, that's in Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation. No, because Yad Aniyim, then therefore, when he says, when he says give it to the poor, because of Yad Aniyim over there already, it's the equivalent of the Aniyim.
What's Yad Aniyim?
It means the hand of the Aniyim. You're very good. It's functioning as an extension of the Aniyim because he's a Gabbai Tzedakah. Then Tosfos quotes that Rabbeinu Hananel says that actually it's not that he wants to change his mind and not give it to Tzedakah after all. All he wanted to do is say, I want to borrow this, and later on I'll give the Aniyim a different chatzidus. And Rabbi Yosef says, because we did Maimat Shloshtam, because I'm present, and therefore, effectively, you've done a kinyan, a Maimat Shloshtam, as we learned about in Gittin, because you have the guy who owes you, me. No, not based. And we said, we learned in Gittin, that Maimat Shloshtam that you can have. If Reuben owes Shimon money, and he says, and Shimon says to Reuben, instead of giving it to me, give it to Levi, and all three of them are present, then Levi is toneous on the spot. This is a similar kind of thing.
No, but they have to be present.
That's the thing. But Rabbi Yosef is present on behalf of the Aniyim. That's and that works. Okay. And how do we know that the Gaboi Tzedakah are considered Yad Aniyim? The Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, just like we find that of Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Yisoimim Einan Tzvichin Pruzbol. When it comes to Yisoimim, do not need a Pruzbol in order to prevent their loans from being canceled during Shmita, because we, the Beis Din, serve as their Yad. So therefore, Rashi says it's the equivalent of as if their shtaris were already handed over to Beis Din. The essence of a pros bowl is you're handing over to Beis Din to collect your debt. The Aniyim already have Beis Din collecting their debts on their behalf. Therefore, they don't need a pros bowl. V'chein toni Rama b'chama, ha'yisayim enim tzirichim pros bowl, because Rama Gamliel, the Beis Din, and Abiyin Shai Yisayim ha'yu, because Rama Gamliel and his Beis Din, or not just Rama Gamliel, but any chash of a Beis Din, actually says, are considered like the fathers of the Yisayim, and they stand in their place. So the same thing, Rabbi Yosef is saying, I'm the Gabbai Tzedaka, I stand in place of the Aniyim. Once you said you're going to give this money to Tzedaka, you can't renege on it. Or according to Rabbi Hanano, you can't borrow it, even though the Aniyim are not present. But I'm present, that's enough that you can't renege on it. Or according to Rabbi Hanano, that you can't borrow and repay it later. Okay. The Gemara tells another case involving the business of a Tekeh HaBere. Chonon Bisha, Chonon the Bad, he was a known bad guy, basically. Tokal Elahu Gavra. He once did this, the skia, to somebody, punched the guy in the ear or blew in his ear or whatever it is, yeah. Also coming to Ravuna, so the case came to Ravuna, again, it's in Bavel, but again, yeah, similar to before, either he was toifus, not he wasn't toifus in this case, but maybe they're aside from what I mentioned before, there's some of the also point out, maybe before, Rav Tobi Bar Masna, and now Ravuna, maybe they had permission from the Nasi in Eretz Yisrael to judge Dinik Nasis in Bavel. Normally you can't, but if you get permission from the Nasi, you can. Maybe in this case they had permission. Anyway. Came to Ravuna, Amalei, so Ravuna tells him, Ziv Hal have a let Ogun Azuza. Go give him a half of Azuza, like we established before. It's a half of Kefim Hanina. Now, Havale Zuza Maka. Now, this Chanan Bisha had a worn out Zuz. Worn out in the sense, Rashi says, the image on the coin was completely rubbed out. So and therefore, not weighed less, but therefore the point is, there's two different gear stories over here. Let's first go with the gears that we have here, and then we'll talk about the back gear, which is slightly different. Boiler mace lemine. So Khan and Bisha wanted to pay the guy using this. You take this coin and give me back a half of those change. Loi have a mischief delay. The Nizik did not want to take it. According to Agoy Tabach, it's the other way around. He had a Zuzamaka, but Loi have a mishtika lay, he couldn't spend it. He couldn't find anybody up until now who wanted to take this coin and pay him. Because it's rubbed out, yeah. Now, if he had gone to a money changer, he could have. Money changers deal with these things. But a regular storekeeper wouldn't want to bother because it's too hard. They first of all, they can melt down, but second of all, whatever. They
remelt it and they add something?
Yeah, or? They remelt it and they use the silver. But your average person is not going to bother with that. Anyway. So the point is, again, according to the Girsa we have, the Nizik himself did not want to accept this coin. According to the Bach Girsa, rather, this coin was not able to be spent, and therefore Chanan had it in his pocket all the time, and he'd never been able to do anything with it. Well, Tokalei Achrina, he gave the guy another tekiah, Viyavi Niyalei, and then he gave him the Zuz. So what are the whole point? What's the point of this? What's the point of this?
Why did he attack him again?
Because if I can't give you the Zuz and get change, then fine, I'll do it again, and then I'll give you the whole thing to pay for both. So what's the point of the story? So a number of Mepharshim talk about a number of points that we learn. One of them is, first of all, there is the idea that we learn that it is definitely a half Zuz, like we say. Second of all, we learn for each Tekiah there's a separate payment. You did it twice, you're going to be high twice. We also learn from it that if you have a coin like that, which is rubbed out, and most people won't take it, but you can, in a pinch, find somebody who will take it, that's still considered valid payment. In this case, the Nizik could have accepted it, and in the end, he ended up having to accept it. And then the Ben Yehoyada adds one more thing, a Musudika thing on it. He says, why are we calling this guy Chanan Bisha, Chanan the Bad? Because we see, even after he did it the first time and came to Beis Din and was obligated to pay, he still wasn't remorseful about it. We see that he went, he said, you know what, if I already did it once, I'm going to do it again, and fine, I'll just give it this one out. So, therefore, we call him Bisha, the bad guy, for not even having Charotta. Bisha means bad. For not even having Charotta for what he did wrong. I'm signing the toast. That's short on a good note. Yeah.